You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ambitious home cooks often strive to tackle the most complicated recipes, but sometimes it can be just as rewarding and significantly less stressful to prepare homemade versions of favorite basics. So we thought that we would take a look at how you can make your own peanut butter, hot sauce, mustard, vinegar, and much more. And joining us is Julia Collin-Davison of America's Test Kitchen. She's one of the editors of the America's Test Kitchen DIY cookbook, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show now. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Good morning. Good afternoon.
You're in Boston, and it's afternoon there too, right?
It is, but I've been eating waffles all day because we're testing them in the test kitchen, so it's been feeling like morning for a couple hours now.
Now, this book covers some pretty basic things, but you also have refrigerated jams, pancetta, chorizo, pates, corn chips, orange jelly slices, sugar cones, root beer. Difficult things, I would think. Are they?
Yeah. Some of them are definitely more challenging than others. I think making homemade mozzarella, definitely after you've made it twice, you start to really get a hang of how it comes together. But then other things are shockingly simple, like the mustard, which I know you mentioned. And once you make your own mustard, it's really hard to buy the stuff in the store anymore because it just tastes so much better.
There have been many times in my life where there have been many, many open jars of mustard in my refrigerator, and they bring something, I would hope anyway, different to a dish. What makes mustard so versatile?
Well, you know, that's a good point. It does go on a numerous savory applications from anything, you know, from roasts to sandwiches to grilling to being used as a sauce to curries and whatnot. It has one of those flavors that you can bend, I think, a number of different ways. And when you make it, you also have the flexibility to infuse those flavors beyond, you know, a little tarragon or a little honey or a little Dijon, which has white wine. You can really, you know, you can add cider, you can add all sorts of things and really, you know, use it in a variety of ways. And especially if you don't make that much, you can use it a little in, you know, on something interesting, make a specialized batch for a pork roast you have in the oven and then, you know, make it a different another time.
But they all begin with the same mustard seeds?
They do. There's actually three mustard seeds you can buy. Now, we use two of them because we think the combination of the two is really nice, and they're pretty easy to find. There's yellow, also known as white, and that has a very mild flavor. And then there's brown, which is a bit spicier, and black, which, again, is a bit spicier. And we use equal parts of the yellow and the brown. I haven't actually really tried mustard with black, but I'm eager to get my hands on some and see how it works. But you just take the mustard seeds, you put them in the bowl, you cover them with some liquids, and this is where you can add different flavors. In the book, we use a little bit of beer and a little bit of vinegar, cider vinegar. But we've been messing around with just cider and wine and fruit juices. And anyway, you let those seeds soften for about, you know, anywhere from 8 hours up to a couple days. And then you just give it a whiz in the food processor. And then again, you can add more flavors there, some sugar. You can brighten it with more vinegar or even add herbs. And then you're done. That's it.
And any other liquids instead of beer or vinegar?
Sure. You know, any liquid will work here. You could use water if you wanted. You could use fruit juices.
Or bourbon.
Or bourbon, exactly. You know, beer is kind of nice because beer and mustard are kind of natural companions. But, you really, you know, the sky's the limit in terms of flavors here. There's not really anything that's going to go wrong. And the reality is it's so inexpensive to make that even if you just throw some wild stuff in there and it tastes lousy, you can just pitch it without really worrying about that you wasted a bunch of money because it's just really inexpensive.
So are we being overcharged when we go to certain specialty stores and find mustards that are really $10-$15 a jar?
Yes, by far, way overcharged. And when you think about the bags of these spices, you can get in sort of an ethnic market. Very often Indian markets carry the three different kinds. You can buy bags of these spices for just a couple bucks. And to make, you know, a cup of mustard, which is a good jar size, you know, you're only using a total half cup of the mustard seed. So, you know, for just a couple bucks, you could make, you know, jars and jars and jars.
Now,
and it tastes so much better. That's what just shocks me. It tastes rounder, fuller, more complex, less harsh. And the same goes for some of these other basics, like Worcestershire sauce.
Do they last as long?
They don't. They don't last as long. And part of that is because we're not adding preservatives, of course. And so, you know, the preservatives help maintain shelf life. And so, you know, we're comfortable saying mustard lasts 3 months, which is a good long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it would last longer. You just have to use your nose and, you know, your taste buds to tell whether it's still good or whether the flavors really fade after a point. Because, again, the preservatives aren't there to preserve their nuances. So at some point, it just tastes a little bland.
Now, if you go to a health food store, you often will find peanuts in a grinder, and you can make your own peanut butter. But is that still cheating? Do you prefer to make it at home?
I do both. I do both. I definitely buy it, and I definitely make it. And I prefer the flavor of the homemade. There's something, you know, if you roast the nuts, and, you know, I like using almonds and making almond butter, and you leave the skins on, you toast them, and it's all in the toasting. And, you know, a couple seconds, if you over-toast it, make sure your almond butter a little bitter, and you kind of learn that the hard way. But you figure out how long to toasting and what the kitchen should smell like when those almonds are perfectly toasted. And then you just, you know, you put it in the food processor, and it takes a while in the food processor. You know, it can take, you know, anywhere to 5 minutes or so, maybe all the way up to 10 minutes, depending on your food processor, how old it is. Mine's pretty old, so it takes a while. But the flavor of the fresh-made almond butter from fresh roasted raw almonds is unlike anything you'll get at even a health food store.
Well, you can find some pretty good mayonnaise and ketchup at any supermarket. What do you see as the advantages of making them yourself?
I think it's fun. Part of it is just making some of these things from scratch. You realize how reliant you have been on supermarkets and how easy it is to do some of this stuff from fun. And very often it tastes better. And for a lot of it, for me, it's just pure fun. It's something fun to do with my daughter on a weekend.
Well, mayonnaise definitely tastes better when it's fresh, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
What about ketchup?
Yeah.
Some people think that Heinz ketchup is the best single ketchup in the world. Can I make something that tastes better than that?
You know, ketchup is highly controversial. We've had ketchup tastings here across, you know, with all the store-bought brands, and we've definitely tasted our blend of homemade ketchup. And you can make something that tastes exactly like it, or you can make something that tastes a little different that you like better. But very often in people's mind, Heinz is the ketchup, so you're always trying to recreate Heinz. But again, ketchup, pretty easy to make. And, you know, depending on your style, you can make it a little spicier or a little clovier. Our recipe is pretty straightforward. And I think our recipe tastes better than Heinz. But
And you mentioned making Worcestershire sauce at home. Better than Lee and Perrin's?
Oh, way better. Now, this was a shocker.
Is it complicated?
You know, No. It takes less than an hour, really. It's just a bunch of pantry ingredients. The most obscure thing you have to go find is tamarind paste. But when you think, if you know about ethnic cooking, tamarind paste is one of the main ingredients in pad thai. So it's around. And then the rest is just, you know, a collection of spices, some shallots. And we add anchovies and a little bit of fish sauce, Thai fish sauce, to give it a little deeper, complex flavor. And side by side, compared to Lee and Perrin's, ours is a little bit thicker in consistency. It's not as spicy, and it's not as harsh. When you really taste Lee and Perrin's, it tastes like vinegar and black pepper. Ours is just a little more round and complex, and it has a little more interest in it.
Now, some of these things you can actually make totally from scratch. You can begin with your own vinegar. How do you make vinegar? Do you just let wine go bad?
Well, you know, the old recipes definitely do that, but that's dicey. It's chancy. We made about 16 batches of vinegar, and it takes anywhere from 3 to 4 months to turn wine into vinegar. And some of our tests failed, and some of them were successful. And there's a lot of information out there. Do you feed them? What kind of wine works best? And what we found, the simpler the better, no feeding schedule, so you don't give it fresh wine as you go. You just put 2 bottles of red wine and some water. You have to cut the wine, because when you turn wine into vinegar, the alcohol amount that the wine starts with is pretty much the acidic, direct correlation to how acidic the vinegar will be. So if you start with a 7% wine or a 13% wine, you're going to wind up with an equal amount of acidity. So you cut it with water. So you know, a 14% wine goes down to a 7% wine, which is a 7% vinegar, which is about right. So cut wine with equal parts water, and then you have to get a mother, a vinegar mother. And you can buy them on Amazon or wine-beer.com. And you put those in the crock, and you just put a clean towel over the crock, dark place, and you let it go for 3 or 4 months. And the mother will really grow. The mother's like a gelatinous raft, if you will. And the mother gets bigger and grows, and the you know, the volume of the liquid goes down, and when you taste it, and it's okay to taste it as it goes, when it stops tasting alcoholic like wine and it starts tasting like vinegar, then you know you're done. And then you just strain it, and you're
good to go. You take the mother out.
And you take the mother out, and you can preserve the mother. You know, the mother grows substantially, and so you can kind of cut it into pieces, put it into a sterilized jar, cover it with some of your strained vinegar, and then the mother will keep for months and months, and you can kind of give them away so you don't have to buy it again. And white wine takes longer than red wine to make vinegar because there's more sulfites in white wine.
One of the things that I appreciated looking through this book was that the ingredients are often much more natural. Like, we're not using high fructose corn syrup in things. We're using dark brown sugar or other things that are perhaps a little healthier for us. But as I went through the book, I kept on thinking, well, aren't some of these things just going to be a little too difficult for me to make? Chorizo or pancetta or orange jelly slices, sugar cones. I guess that would be great if you were having a party. Are they all that difficult?
No. I think some of the cured meats are really interesting in that you think, oh, goodness, you know, how I know if it's going to be safe, it's going to be edible, am I creating botulism, all that sort of comes up into your head. But really, these cuts of meats are easy to find. The cures are really, you know, kosher, salt, and based, and you season them yourself, and it's fun. A good starting one to get into it is the gravlax. I don't know if you've ever made gravlax, but this is amazing. It is better than anything you could buy anywhere. And I'm not calling out Russ and Daughters because I've been there and I love their stuff, but it is fun to make it at home.
Well, you're going to be coming back in 2 weeks, and we're encouraging our listeners to try some of these things out. We have posted some recipes on our show page, and in a couple of weeks we'll find out how their attempts at making stuff at home have worked out. What would you recommend they start with?
Well, I think some of those condiments we talked about are give you an instant pleasure. You know, like the Worcestershire sauce or the ketchup or the mustard, even, which takes a day. The gravlax, like I said, I'm a big fan. And this is silly, but there's a corn chip recipe, and they're basically homemade Fritos, but they are amazing. They taste so much better than you could imagine a corn chip would ever taste. And, yeah, those are a must-do.
And no artificial ingredients.
That's right. Yeah, it's just all supermarket staples that, you know, for example, the corn chips. There's a cornmeal called masarepa, and then there's, you know, a stone-ground cornmeal, salt, water, and corn oil for frying. So it's a very simple ingredient list. But those are by far one of my faves.
And you also have some exotic things here, like a recipe for sriracha, which could be found in most Asian restaurants these days. Can you use it anything? It's kind of like a hot sauce?
It's exactly like a hot sauce. It has a little more body to it. It's a little thicker. And it's made with red jalapeno chilies. So in terms of the Scoville scale, which is the heat index for spicy peppers, it's not that high on the chart. So it's not too spicy. Ours has a lot of garlic in it, and that's what people really like the sriracha for. It's a chili garlicky flavor. And ours is a little bit sweeter and a little less hot than the stuff you buy in the store. And the stuff you buy in the store is also fermented, so it has a slightly darker flavor, where ours is a bit fresher and a bit, you know, it's easier to make because you just blend it up in a food processor. You give it a quick turn in a saucepan to reduce it down and intensify the flavors, and then you give it another spin in the blender to get it smooth, and you're done.
You also have a whole section on making cheese and yogurt and curds. Can I make pretty much any cheese at home? Feta?
Yeah,
goat
feta,
cheese?
Absolutely, easily. Paneer is a nice, easy one to start with that, you know, is really good. It's an Indian cheese. The American cheese, now this was one of the entries in this book that's getting a lot of attention. It's super fun. You have to be a fan of American cheese, which I am. And if you're not, I totally understand why.
Well, does it come sliced with a plastic wrapping?
Well, no, you have to form it into like a little loaf pan, and to make it really super thick and sliceable meant it was too rubbery. So ours is a little on the softer side, but you can still slice it and throw it into a sandwich. And the base of it is Colby cheese with a little milk powder, some gelatin, salt, cream of tartar, and whole milk. So again, the ingredient list, pretty easy to wrap your head around. There's no preservatives or artificial colors in there. But, yeah, that one's fun in terms of cheese.
Well, Julia, you're going to be back with us in a couple of weeks. And
yeah,
we are encouraging our listeners to try some of the recipes that they'll find on our website or in the book.
Mm-hmm. It
might be a lot of fun just to get the book. It is called DIY, Can It, Cure It, Churn It, Brew It. DIY, of course, means do it yourself, and it's from America's Test Kitchens. And I've been talking to Julia Collin Davidson, who is one of the people who works at America's Test Kitchens. What did you say you were working on right now?
Oh, well, we're working on a gluten-free book. So I've been eating a lot of gluten-free muffins and biscuits, which the first week they were really lousy, I have to say. But we've turned the ship around, and now we're producing some really good gluten-free baked goods. So, yeah, that's what's currently going on with me in the kitchen. But
And judging from the mail I get, there'll be a lot of listeners interested in that. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so nice to talk to you. Sounds good.